Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
There's no vote necessary. This has become a de facto semifinal game.
Got a man open, Amari Cooper!
15 seconds, they're going to get two throws to the end zone.
Murray.
Second half start. Fire to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama breaks Georgia hearts.
Tua's down again, and that means Jalen Hurts, a guy who was replaced at the national championship, comes in to take over.
Quarterback draw, Jalen Hurts. Touchdown!
This was one of the greatest games we ever watched. We're going to be seeing more chapters of Alabama and Georgia.
Here's Bryce stepping up. Running room. He's got it. He's going to go. Snap. He looks and throws, intercepted Alabama.
Jordan Battle may have just broken the Bulldogs' back.
And for the Georgia Bulldogs, anything short of a national championship, frankly, is a disappointment. And you got big, bad Bama waiting.
It is the final day of the college football season, and you are looking at Lucas Oil Stadium. In Indianapolis, in the teens outside, it will be smoking hot inside here in just a matter of hours as the college football championship has arrived in Indy. And welcome to our world. We'll deal with it all this afternoon. All the players, all the people that matter. We'll talk to the commissioner of the SEC about what didn't happen today with the CFP expansion. Roman Harper has been here seemingly for a month.
Yeah, I can't shake the cold out of my bones at this point, Paul. It's freezing outside, and welcome to Indianapolis.
It is our final Monday night of the football season, and Roman, everywhere people go, it's not about, well, is Alabama going to win? It's, can Georgia deal with Alabama? Can Nick Saban handle Kirby Smart again? The questions are pedestrian. What's going to happen?
Well, it's going to be a tough game. Everybody always talks. Georgia is so talented. They are so good defensively. And can they get back on track? Can they continue to believe in themselves as this game starts to happen and unfold? Can they get punched and respond?
Right.
Last week versus Michigan never punched them. So that was just a game that kind of played right into Georgia's hands the way that they played every other game this season. And then I don't know if it actually truly helped them going forward because they weren't pushed. Or maybe it did help them because now we at least got our swagger back and our confidence going back forward that we are the dominant team and dominant defense that we've been all year long. So Georgia has to play this game on their terms. If they do not turn the football over, if they are able to run the football and also throw the football off of play actions, not just straight dropbacks for Stetson Bennett, that is the formula for Georgia to win this game. If Alabama's able to score, if Georgia can't put pressure on Bryce Young, if they keep him clean, Alabama that is, keep Bryce Young clean and out in the pocket, they're going to be tough because Bryce Young is that good. And we all know in the biggest games, what the two things that matter the most are, number one, your head coach, and number two, your quarterback. And Alabama has the advantage in both of those.
The buildup has been predictable. We've really been talking about this game since Atlanta. I know there were games 10 days ago, but not really. We'll talk to some Georgia reporters here later, but we understand that Kirby Smart has been trying to steal another page out of Nick Saban's book, using sports psychologists. In fact, one may have come in last night. You've sat on the other side of that countless times. As a player, and you have a sports psychologist speaking to you the night before the biggest game of your life, what are you thinking about?
I mean, personally, I'm probably like, why is this person up here? I'd rather be watching a movie or something, unless you really, truly need it.
Right.
if Georgia needs it, that Kirby senses that that is what his team needs the most to get over this hump, then you're going to do whatever you can. You're going to unturn all every stone or whatever you got to do to get your team prepared and ready to win. Not only that, but a belief in themselves that we're not just going to go out here and play this game, that it's not going to be just the same as it's always been in the previous 3 to 4 matchups between Alabama and Georgia. Whatever it is, they must do something differently and find a way to where they don't have the costly turnovers and the big moments that cost them, that they must force Alabama to make these mistakes. And if you look at Georgia defensively, you don't have to change a lot. You know, the big plays that Alabama had, Georgia played a big hand in that by blowing coverages, mental errors defensively, and not executing the call. And if we look at, if I'm Georgia and we're looking back over the tape, it's like, okay, if we clean up this, we do that, they don't have anything. So it's really a lot on Georgia. Can they stay the course? And can they not have mental errors and blow coverages? And if they line up and make Alabama out-execute them every single play for 60 minutes, you like your chances.
The one thing I hear from other coaches, and we'll have many on later, we heard this from Jimbo Fisher on Friday, we've heard it from countless analysts, is that Alabama is a weaker team than they were back then. Some counter that by saying, well, Brian Robinson is healthier, but you know, they've got linemen are too hurt.
Yep.
They've got people across the board hurt. Some places that would be devastating. At Alabama, what's the impact?
I don't think it's not much because you just don't have drop off. I think if Chris Owens doesn't play, that could be a big deal. The right tackle, because they really don't have anybody else other than that. J.C. Latham stepped in for Ekior last week when he went down with the shoulder injury, but he actually wants to play, I'm pretty sure, because this is a homecoming for him. Ekior is from Indianapolis, so he's going to want to play in front of the home crowd. So we'll see, but I think offensive line-wise, in such a big vital position like that, I think Alabama, under Nick Saban, whatever they do, they always have an answer. You know, so if we have a right tackle out, we're going to put somebody over to help him block. They're going to do something differently. And this game's going to come down to how are your preparation going into it? But most importantly, what are the game plan changes that goes on during the game? Like when you go in at halftime, what are the things that you get done differently? And that you got to have some answers coming out of the half. That was the biggest difference last game, was that Alabama, they got hot, scored 17 straight. Georgia tied it up. Alabama scored again. And then that next touchdown coming in the third quarter just blew the doors off. And then with the Jordan Battle interception for 6, Georgia just can't score in bunches like that. So if Alabama's able to score and keep pressure on Georgia to have to try and keep up with them, that does not bode well for Georgia. No team has been able to do that all year long. And that's why when I mean that this game has to be played on whosoever terms those are, is really who's going to win this game.
So as the game unfolds, most of us are still settling down. Where would you be watching the closest?
It's going to be, can Georgia get pressure on Bryce Young? How much does Georgia actually blitz, not just 5-man pressures where, you know, they blitz a linebacker and then they drop a defensive end, or 4-man pressures where simulated pressure where it's really not anybody more than what you normally send. But do they play man-to-man behind that? Georgia's not a team that plays a ton of man-to-man defense when they blitz. So do they bring 6 or 7 guys? Do they zero pressure Alabama? Do they just try and heat up Bryce Young? And not only that, but they must keep Bryce Young inside the pocket. When they blitz a lot of times right up the middle, Bryce would just get outside. He'd get outside of the ends and get outside of the D tackles that might be wrapping to keep contained, and they could not keep him in the pocket. And also his ability to create with his own legs and actually extend plays. Also, Brian Robinson is going to be a huge factor in this game. Not so much as always running the football. You know, he can have a 2 to 3 yards and really just kind of keeping them steady with the chains. Maybe a good conversion here and there. But pass protection, he's really good at that. And that is where he's going to have a really big factor in this game, is these blitzing linebackers understand where they're coming from, also being able to help a tackle or a guard when they're missing a blocker, struggling blocking guys, just sitting in there and then being just a blanket. You know, for a simple outlet for Bryce Young late, as plays do not develop down the field.
On the other side, you have Pete Golden. You don't hear his name mentioned. You hear about Dan Lanning. You hear about Monken. You hear about Bill O'Brien. But he's like the everyman defensive coordinator. Everyone seemingly wanted him out after the A&M game, even though a lot of the problems were on the offensive
side. Some people wanted him out before that, Paul.
Yeah, and he's dialed up a pretty good finish to the season.
Alabama's gotten so much better they have grown into this team. They have grown into a championship caliber team, especially defensively, all year long. We thought that this was going to be a year that Alabama maybe regressed offensively and that defensively they were going to have to win games. We were completely wrong. Jameson Williams, Bryce Young, John Metchie, all these guys completely stepped up and really just blew this thing out of the water offensively. So defensively, since the Arkansas game, I thought they started playing better in the front seven. Defensive back-wise, they were terrible. But since that moment, they've steadily, piece by piece, gotten better as a defense, and they're making forcing turnovers, and they're playing great defense. They still don't allow anybody to run the football either, and that's also a big, big strength of theirs.
Roman Harper joining us. We'll see him all afternoon and evening and into the morning right here. We'll take a break. Many more guests will be dropping by. The head coach at Cincinnati. We'll get a scouting report on Alabama from him. And many others as we lead you up to tonight's kick a couple hours away.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we are back. We're live at Lucas Oil Stadium where fans are looking for something to do because we still have about 5 hours to go before the kickoff of tonight's game. And our next guest knows about waiting for kickoff. We were out in Arlington just a week and change ago as the head coach of Cincinnati was waiting to take on Alabama. Coach Luke Fickell, the National Coach of the Year. Coach, first of all, congratulations on the tremendous success being the first from your classification to get into the playoff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I appreciate that of saying our classification. You know, I don't know if you know that I don't use some of those P words and different things like that.
I was testing you.
No, it's really well. Obviously, a different day. Not having to worry and sweat as much as these guys are, but nonetheless, it was a heck of a run and a great group of guys we had.
I mentioned 5 hours away, Coach. You went through that on New Year's Eve. Your game started about 3:30 in the afternoon. At some point, there's almost nothing left to do. I'm sure coaches can always find something. But what's it like 5 hours before a major championship game?
This is the toughest time for me, at least. Do you try to do some more? Do you look more? Do you start to let your mind race and wander? A night game in particular with no other games on during the day. I mean, all you do is sit and listen to people. I mean, you got to find a way to occupy your time. You worry about your kids and what they listen and what they hear. But nonetheless, these 5 hours take a lot of time until you can get to the stadium. I tell you that it's a long day, that's for sure.
You know a lot about these two teams. You took on Georgia last year in a bowl game, Alabama this year, and I realize things change a little bit, but let's talk about the two different teams in terms of preparing for them and what you see and what you have seen, especially up close.
Well, you're preparing for really big physical athletes. I think no matter what, there's not much of a difference, at least from what we saw and what we were preparing for. I do think that there is a bit of a difference, and especially this year and defensively a little bit. And, I mean, I think Georgia has been a little bit more of an aggressive defense. I think that they've made some more things happen, you know, by blitzing, by doing some different things. I think this year Alabama has relied upon, you know, just the structure of how they do it, being physical up front, not having to create as many things with blitzes and things like that, and just been, you know, more physical, more sound and things. So I think tonight we're gonna see whose idea maybe wins out and can Alabama, you know, stay with what they've done and be a little bit more vanilla, maybe not load the box, not have to blitz as much, and does Georgia continue to do what they've done and try to send more pressure after Bryce Young? And, you know, in the first game, obviously they gave up some big plays doing that. But what adjustments and changes will they make from a few weeks ago will be really unique.
It's been under 2 weeks since you prepared for Bryce Young. What is it like preparing for him, and is it different when you're on the field with him?
Well, it is. Obviously, you prepare for things you think you're going to get, but you don't know exactly what that's going to be. You know, for us, trying to prepare for Alabama without Minshew, how are they going to make up for, you know, the production that he had all year? Obviously, they've got new guys, and guys can fill in. But really, there's a lot of production that they were missing going into our game. So what was going to be the unique thing? How were they going to be different? What were they going to do to try to make up for some of that production? We kind of assumed, and I assume even tonight, they'll throw a little bit more into Bryce Young's hands. And obviously, he's done so much. Obviously, he's a Heisman Trophy winner. But what more can he do? Can he start to maybe run the football a little bit more? Can he spread some things out and make some more things happen? Because he's made things happen all year, but in different ways, not just getting the ball to different guys, but even creating some more things through his ability to run the football.
Brian Robinson obviously was a big part of the CFP semifinal. You know, he was in the original game 5 weeks ago, but he was a little banged up. But what can he do tonight that would make a difference?
I think he's going to be as big a factor as anybody for Alabama offensively. It's just how dedicated will they be. In our game, obviously, a couple weeks ago, my idea is that they probably said, hey, Brian Robinson's got to fill in and, you know, take some of the production that maybe we lost from Minshew. And I thought they were really much more committed to the run in our game than I had seen them in all year. Now, whether that's what they believe they could do against us or need to do against us, or was that something with the absence of Minshew? Will they continue that? I think that it's important for them to get him going, give him those opportunities. Don't shy away from it if it's not, you know, something that happens really fast, and not put it all on to Bryce Young too early.
Talking to Coach Luke Fickell, I wouldn't mind talking about you and your program for a moment, Coach, because it was an amazing year. It's been an amazing run since you took this program over. And I would like to hear in terms of your mindset, you know what the pundits say. It was so easy to say Cincinnati doesn't do this or Cincinnati doesn't do that. But you have withstood all that, proven pretty much everyone wrong. What has that experience been like as a coach?
Well, I mean, you've learned not to listen. But we can do that. At least I can. I can block those kinds of things out. But you worry about what your 18 to 22 years here and what they continue to hear and what they believe. And so our big thing was just to continue the same messages that we do, really rely upon our leaders. And that's where we're most fortunate. I mean, we've had some really good success over the last couple years, but it's really because of those guys, those leaders, and their ability to not let the outside over, you know, affect them. And I mean that in a way that as we were building things up, you know, they were underdogs. They were, you know, had a chip on their shoulder. And then all of a sudden, even 2 years ago, the transition a little bit of being maybe the favorite in your league to then, you know, a possibility of making a run at getting in the playoffs to this past year where now there's an expectation and, you know, they want to carry the flag for a lot of the, so to speak, non, you know, blue bloods and things like that. And for our guys to handle that was really remarkable, and it's really created not just a culture, everybody says culture, but an atmosphere around our program that is really fun to be around.
It's been remarkable to see you in the situation, and yeah, you know, coaches don't like to talk about themselves, at least publicly. And your name, I don't know how many times I've been sitting there being asked the question, what about this job? And Luke Fickell. It doesn't matter where it is, West Coast, East Coast, Midwest. And you're still there, though, which is pretty remarkable. Now, do you think you would still be there if your team wasn't in the playoffs?
I mean, yes, I do. And, you know, just like we ask our kids to do is to try not to, you know, we all hear and we all listen at times to the outside. And it is what it is. But what we can't do is let it change who we are. And I think more than anything, I'm fortunate to be, I'd say grounded, but I get blinded as well. You know, as you get in the midst of winning football games and competing and doing those things, but be grounded in some different ways to make decisions at a cool head, you know, in the off season about what's important to you, and to have a family, my wife, to be able to really kind of, when you lose sight of some of those things, when you get in the midst of a season, to always kind of bring you back and remind you of what it's really about and what's important to us. And, you know, so where everybody else has an opinion, the most important thing is what's important to us. And, you know, for us, to be honest with you, it wouldn't be right to another program if my whole family, myself, everybody involved, wasn't all in someday if we were to go to another place.
Your story is so remarkable because, you know, you were an outstanding player, you were an assistant. All of a sudden, one day, you're thrust into the position of running one of the great brands in college football history. And it didn't end well, and most people forgot about you in terms of those who are now propping you up. I know you're a football coach, you're a teacher, but is it satisfying at all to have watched this circle be complete?
I can't say that I haven't saved something on one of those phones that somebody said, whatever that was, 10, 11 years ago, 2011. Always have things that are going to continue to motivate you, but also to remind you of where you come from. But you know what? I try not to get into all those things. I think through that whole situation, for me, people could say you were forgotten. In reality, my passions had changed a bit. I didn't, you know, that experience was not something that was a whole lot of fun for me, for my family, for everybody around. And so, you know, I kind of went back to being an assistant football coach. And then that was what was important to me and what was fun to me. And as your passions change and you get a different idea of what you want to do, you continue to grow. Now I've been able to reflect upon that time in particular, not the negatives and not what people said, but just reflect on all the experiences I had in that year in particular, all the failures I had and the mistakes I made. And it's helped me be who I am as a coach today.
Coach Luke Fickell, doing a lot of commentary today for the network. I know you'd rather be here playing, but it's still an amazing story to tell. And, Coach, it's really nice of you to come by and share some of your thoughts with us.
Well, I appreciate you having me, Paul. Thank you very much.
Great to have you on. Luke Fickell, joining us, head coach at Cincinnati. And we have a long way to go. We are just underway here at Lucas Oil. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And we're back here at the stadium hours before the kickoff, and probably nobody outside the teams are counting down that more than our next guest, Holly Rowe, who will be on the sideline tonight with the Crimson Tide. And Holly, you've been doing this at this level for some time in big games like this. But I'm curious. We'll talk about the games in a minute, but it's 3:33. The game doesn't start for 5 hours, and you're here schmoozing away. Shouldn't you be like in a room calmly sitting on a couch listening to music or something?
I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about the kids today, like the players who are going to play in this game, and they are young people, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds. I'm super nervous today. I have so many butterflies. I've got nervous energy. I'm just going crazy inside. And I thought, we're not going to play a single play in this game. I can't imagine how these athletes and players feel, because it's exciting. Those of us who love college football, it's just really exciting.
Yeah, it's one thing to see it on television because we're reacting to our friends or our family. You're watching their reaction. What is that like, especially at this level? This is the highest level you can get.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most special moments, because you get to see these really private, intimate moments. I have a vivid memory of Ron Dayne running for a Rose Bowl record and Barry Alvarez going over to congratulate him, and Ron Dayne throwing up in his face. You know, like, there's all these funny moments that happen on sidelines that you never see or never know about. I remember exactly the expression on Matthew Stafford's face when he was a freshman, and they told him he was going to go into the game at Georgia unplanned, and he couldn't find his helmet. You know, there's all these intimate, private moments that we are the only witness to, and it's really special.
Holly, the narrative is set in stone. We've been talking about it really for 5 weeks. I know there were two games a week ago, but a lot of fans wanted to look past it. As you, and you've been on the sideline for both these teams countless times this year. When you're around Alabama, what do you pick up? What do you learn?
Well, I have been studying Alabama like a science project ever since Nick Saban got there, because I think he is the greatest living coach that we've ever seen. And I want to know how he does it and how does he maintain it. And so I study him. And what I have learned is there is no one who is more consistent. And I mean the walkthroughs at the same time. The schedule is exactly the same. The meals. Now, that doesn't mean he won't adapt and evolve as science gets bit different, football gets different. I think what people don't understand is he's been one of the great adapters of all time, but he does it with a consistent approach, and it's fascinating.
You've seen Georgia, you started the season with Georgia, you saw them again last week, you've seen them other times. What did you notice last week roaming their sidelines that struck out?
I think they're back. I think watching the film, I've now watched it three times, the SEC championship game, and that is arguably the worst Georgia played all season. And I think last week against Michigan, that was the Georgia team that I saw all year long. And I think they played with a confidence and a dominance. You know, they are a big physical team. And I think on paper, I think you could make a great argument that Georgia top to bottom is the better team, whether they win or lose today. They are loaded, Paul. And I thought last week they got back to doing that against Michigan and were the more physical team. And if they can be the more physical team than Alabama today, they'll be national champs, but they didn't do it in the SEC championship game.
You mentioned Nick Saban, and you've covered, you know, the greats, Gino and Pat Summitt in basketball, who, you know, both sides will argue is the greatest coach of all time. I mean, only about, 19 championships between the two of them. You've seen so many others. And we had a conversation, I don't know, 2 months ago, and it really struck me. You were in Tuscaloosa and talking about Nick Saban. I want to go back to that and piggyback to what you've learned this week. Being around him, learning from him, and with somebody of your skill set, just observing greatness is an understatement. But what do you see when you're around him?
Well, it's the most boring answer in the world, but it's consistency. This is a man who eats the same thing every day. And yes, I have double-checked. There is a special person that brought the Little Debbie's snacks for breakfast. They are here in Indianapolis, so never fear.
But you ever had one?
I have not. Do you love them?
Not to get in the middle of this conversation, but we when I was in Birmingham, we did a local TV show, like Breakfast at the Sabins. And
you don't love it?
I decided I don't eat sweets like that. It was just, but I decided to try it. And with we were talking to Miss Terry, and I grabbed into his personal jar and ate one. And I must tell you, I thought I was going to die.
Oh, stop.
I kid you not. I mean, it was, you know, it was like just, you know, pressing, you know, blood sugar, just raw sugar into my veins. And it made, but I don't do well with sugar.
You know, okay.
I don't know how he does it with that.
He does it every single day. They packed them to come here. But I mean, it is hard to be consistent. Think about in your own life, you know, think about how you get up every day. Do you make your bed? Like all these little habits that bring about a consistent lifestyle, and it's hard to do. And I think I told you this story. Todd Blackledge gave me a great gift a couple of Christmases ago, and it was a binder that came from Bear Bryant. It's like a private binder of all of his notes. And there's only a couple of these around, and I have one of them. And I went through all of these pages of Bear Bryant's private notebook, and you would think you're reading a Nick Saban manual. I think that the similarities between two of these greatest coaches we've ever seen in college football and at Alabama, I think would be shocked at how similar they really are, of the ability to do the same thing. And in these little handwritten, scrabbly handwriting of Bear Bryant, talking about making sure to make players feel good about themselves so they will continue to improve and be engaged. Nick Saban does that.
Holly, as you gather stories for this week, I want to get to one in particular, but I'm curious, the game ends and it's not like that's the only game you do. You're doing a lot of different things. But when you start preparing for this game, the biggest game in college football, what is that process like?
Well, I set out a 2-deep chart because I think one of my biggest jobs is to be the eyes and ears of the TV truck. And I'm really proud that some of my best work never shows up on TV. It's me telling the director, hey, this guy's hurt, or hey, they're talking to this kid. So that's a real art and skill to sideline reporting. I don't think people realize. But I've really dug into the two greatest players on Alabama that will, if they win this game, it will be because of these two kids. And it's Bryce Young. And I think some of the storytelling I've looked at around Bryce Young is I'm just fascinated by his mental makeup. He is one of the more mental conditioned young athletes I've ever talked to. And that comes from his dad, Craig, who is a mental health expert, mental health therapist. And so this kid has learned positive self-talk from a very young age. And in this era where athletes are struggling with mental health, I find that to be a really interesting side note and side story. And then Will Anderson. Will Anderson Jr. can wreck this game, can ruin this game, can be the biggest piece of this win for Alabama if they win. And I'm just obsessed by him because someone said to me, Will Anderson is just like Nick Saban in that he's never satisfied. And why? Because he grew up with five older sisters. And this is a cute story. They are not going to be able to be here at this game today because they are home tending his 10 pit bull puppies. Danita, their pit bull, had puppies. So the sisters are at home watching the puppies during this championship game for Will. But he is never satisfied, and he is constantly trying to get better because his sisters are constantly telling him that he's not good enough. They'll text him after the game where everybody thinks he did great, and they'll say, you were slow. You weren't fast enough. You didn't do your job. And so he's got this family that has kept him grounded and pushed him to be great.
They'll be home with the puppies, and Will will be manhandling the dogs in his mind. Holly, thank you. We'll get you a little bit of rest and some coffee, and we'll see you many more times this afternoon, but mainly tonight. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Holly Rowe joining us right here as we continue.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have all of you here. We are live in Indianapolis. Tim Tebow dropping by to get his thoughts on the game. And Tim, thank you for being here. And before we get to all the usual things that have been hashed out a few times, you played in some of these games, a couple of these national championship games. What's it like for a player a couple hours before a game?
Probably the worst part, especially before you leave the hotel. It's just you're sitting around. I remember for our second championship, I had about 35 of the guys packed in my room. And the chaplain who could play the guitar was just singing the guitar, and everyone was just kind of hanging because it's such a long day. I mean, you try to sleep as long as you can, and you can only go through so many meetings, and you're waiting. You just want it to hurry up and get there, and you really don't want to watch TV because there's no other games on like there are most of the time. And so you don't want to watch everybody just sit there and talk about, you know, any which way of you and everybody on your team. And so you just try to kind of avoid it, but you get bored out of your mind, and you're itching for that moment to come. And so I think, honestly, it's kind of gets overlooked, but who can kind of handle that time better? I think it really does help a team be a lot more calmer and kind of handle the pressure and the magnitude of the game a lot better.
Yeah, I can't imagine anything worse than, you know, being a quarterback or running back or a linebacker and just, you know, sitting there 12:30, flip on SportsCenter, and hear some clown like me try to break the game down. And I go, what's this guy doing? I mean, where you're right. You don't think about it. There's nothing on today. It's
nothing,
Monday.
There's nothing on. There's nothing for you to do. And you can't really walk too many times out of your hotel room because people are waiting and fans. And so you're like kind of isolated.
Right.
And it's it's not fun. And I would say who handles that the best, it really does play into the game. And Saban's had such a system, and Kirby's done a really good job at that, but it's even more so in the championship games. And for me, one of those ways was having some counsel, some friends, pastors, you know, you could talk to. But then it was also having a good relationship with your coaches where you could kind of just go to the lunchroom and just chill and hang and laugh, where it didn't necessarily always have to be about ball, but you could still be with them. I think that's really where we kind of took it to the next level as a team and camaraderie when, you know, we didn't have to be together only when we were talking football. We wanted to be together because we were that close.
So, 8:15 Eastern time game, you're sitting around. At what point do you have the pregame meal, and can you eat it?
Most of the time for me, I could not really eat it. It's usually about 3 hours or so before the game. You'll have your last pregame meal. You'll finish your last little walkthrough, little final speeches. You'll get on the bus, and you'll head to the stadium. And that was where the juices would really start to pile up. And I can even tell you, when I got on the bus going to Miami, when we got off, I couldn't even contain it. I pretty much ripped my jacket and like had one of those outbursts in front of the fans before I even got into the stadium. See, for me in those championship games, I needed to go to the field, run around, throw, catch, just have fun. You know, I used to go through the receiver drills and do all that. I almost wanted to get tired to kind of burn away the anxiety and that like restless energy to almost where I had to catch a second wind before the game, but it was more of a peace second wind.
So you just didn't want to be going in a million different directions when the kickoff came.
Yeah, and I didn't want to just sit around for 2 hours waiting for the game to get here. I just felt better once I was out there and I was playing because it's what I know so well. It's what I've done since I was a boy.
We talk so much about, boy, this team's going to be mad, but it seems like, based on what you're telling me, by the time you get out to the field, all you're thinking about is your assignments. Are you long past whatever frustrations you had because of the last?
I would say it could be both. I would say, yeah, you're really focused on your assignments, but I'll tell you, in some of the championship games we were in, those other teams put an extra chip on our shoulder by what they were saying pregame. And even in the second national championship, after the national anthems, one of their players sprinted over to me across the field and said a lot of things that I won't repeat. Hmm. But
we'd like to hear those.
All right. And all my teammates heard that too. And
why would someone do that?
I don't know. It never helps you. It only helps your teammates to rally you even that much more. And I tell you what, I mean, I know sometimes we make a big deal about it, but man, there is something so real and tangible to having a real chip on your shoulder. In 06, everybody, it was all about Ohio State. They're the best team. They just had the Heisman Trophy winner. And you know what? Our whole team, but really our defense was so sick. You won't be able to stop them. Michigan couldn't stop them. No one will be able to stop them. And our defense demolished them. You know, and then it was, okay, in 2008, well, Oklahoma's one of the best teams in history. Their offense, again, is another Heisman Trophy winner. And it was like, again, it was like, okay. And you know, there's something in me that feels like Georgia might feel like that a little bit. Like, will they ever get over the hump? Will they ever get over the hump? They hear that over and over, and then it didn't happen. But these are Georgia players with a lot of pride, especially on defense, and led by N'Kobe Dean. And I think, I don't know if Georgia will win, but I think that they will play their absolute hearts out because they have leaders like N'Kobe Dean, like Jordan Davis, like Stetson. I think they have such a chip on their shoulder that they're going to play as hard as any game they've ever played.
And on the other side, in the remaining moments, Alabama just tries to manage their coolness, if there's such a thing, because that's a team that really does understand what it's like to be here.
Yes, but they're also a team. There's a reason why Coach Saban said after the SEC championship that what you guys said was yummy. It was really yummy because he knew he didn't have to say a lot because the media did it for him and his team played so inspired. Now, can you find that same inspiration in this game? And people would say, well, how can you not find the same inspiration? It's a national championship game. Guys, what we're talking about is the difference of
a split second of one play of the game. That's the difference between winning and losing a national championship. It's not, oh, I'm going to try or I'm not going to try. It's for 60 to 70 plays. How can I be 100% locked in, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in every single one of these ways? How can I be at maximum level for every one of those plays, even when my body might be super fatigued or I might be emotionally drained, or you go through the highs and lows of the joy of having a touchdown versus maybe in the second national championship, I threw two interceptions, right? So mentally, you got to get over that too. I'd only thrown two the entire season, and I threw two in the first half of that game, right?